Hawaiian culture and history teacher Rolinda Bean talks story about her personal journey of teaching Hawaiian history and cultural mores that have been passed along generation after generation through genetic imprinting and story. Miss Bean teaches Hawaiian culture and history on the Big Island of Hawaii and works at the Sheraton Kona. Rolinda Bean, here we are on the Big Island, Kona side. Yeah. Tell us about what you do, your work here at the hotel.
Born and raised here in Kona. I come from a fishing family. This coast right here is my backyard. Welcome. And I am the cultural resource individual here on property, sharing the stories of the lifestyle of our families that once lived within this district, telling the stories about the village of Ko'ukulailai, which is here on property.
And that village is a very legendary, historic village, isn't it? Back in the day, King Kamehameha and before.
Yeah, very historical village that this hotel now sits on, this resort sits on, yeah.
And there's some archaeological evidence, some stones down there on the beach that are very spiritual and very important in Hawaiian history.
So the stories that have been shared with us is there's a heiau here, Ka'ukulailai. Some of the stories that was shared to us is that this heiau was utilized for ceremonies. And such ceremonies could have been for a significant elder of this district or a ali'i of high status of this district. The story is shared that when its remains was brought to this heiau, ceremony is done on it.
Let's talk for a moment, go back in time. A heiau, when it was built and constructed, was out of lava stone, like a platform.
Yeah.
But then there was a wooden or bamboo structure or of some sort, like a temple on top of it, right?
So there's many, many uses and interpretations of the use for heiau. And various sizes for these heiaus. This heiau was used for ceremony. It's interlocking, it's dry stacking, building rocks. This one heiau here, Ka'ukulailai, was utilized for when a significant elder, ali'i of this district, was passed. Its remains was brought here so that its spirits would be lifted to have a new beginning. Thus, the meaning of this district, Ke'auho, the new beginning. It also can refer to the new current that comes into this bay. So there's many stories shared on the focus and the purpose for these heiaus.
And right close to the heiau is a stone.
This stone is called Pohaku Pele, and the story shared with this stone, it's called a bell rock. Mm-hmm. And Auntie Lily, who is the elder of this district that was born and raised here, shares the story that when the rock was laid down horizontally, they would use a certain baton and find its sweet spot and hit on it.
Oh, okay.
And it makes an alarming sound.
So a true bell then.
A bell. And a different rhythm or beat to this indicated a different type of traveler coming in. So if it was friends, foe, or ali'i. So it warned the villagers here to prepare for that arrival.
Before the advent of Western explorers and whatnot, there was no written language in Hawaiian, true?
No written language. It was all oral.
So true classic oral history. So everything that you know and that you learned as a historian major, history major, was ultimately, in going back in time, passed down generation to generation.
And some of our stories passed down from our elders, grandparents, their generation. We didn't know why things happened. How come? Because it was just passed on. We don't know why this event happened. How come? Why we feel this way? Because the story is passed down orally. It was only until we became adults ourselves or college students that we got to do archival research and really dig in and really find out, whoa, this event is because of this. So as an adult now, you can start to weave things together. and tie all the stories together and make a little bit more sense to why our kids or our families feel the way that they feel about certain places and certain stories.
So part of it is almost instinctual, and people don't even consciously maybe know. It's just a feeling.
It's really amazing why we're talking about this, because that's my capstone. We call it ancestral knowledge. We don't know why we feel the way that we feel, but there's something deep within us that's embedded with us that we already know that information and how come.
Genetic imprinting.
Yeah. DNA knowledge, ancestral knowledge. And it's also the knowledge that we carry deep within our na'au. And when we say that that knowledge is within our na'au, it's listening to our intuitions, listening to what feels right about it.
So it must be fascinating for you in your journey to prove some of your instincts right.
Yeah, I'm getting chicken skin right now, but yeah. And it's going to be a fascinating journey for me at the moment, because we know this information, but we don't know how come.
But you're figuring it out as you go.
You know, we were told that we have three pico. And a pico for us is like the belly button. We have a pico that is on the top of our head. And when the child is born, the newborn, it's a soft spot here. And this pico receives the knowledge from our ancestors from above. Yeah. And then the pico here, the belly button, is the present information, the present knowledge. And then the genital pico is for the future generation. So we believe that this all ties in.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So in your work here, you're teaching and interpreting and translating and sharing history and culture to the guests as well as the staff?
To those that choose to take the time to learn, then that would be mainly our hotel guests, this is their path in regards to visiting Hawaii to learn about the culture. They'll spend their whole time with me. If not, they visit Volcano and Mauna Kea, which is fine, but the idea is to share those stories as well, to share with our associates, all the employees here, the significance, and our guests comes for aloha. They come for the culture. How do we do that? How do we portray that?
Talk to us for a moment about aloha spirit, because that is the most pervasive, unspoken feeling that one gets when you're around people from this culture.
Aloha is what we live. It is not what we say. Yeah. And the hospitality industry has shared that. We have to say aloha. We got to live aloha. We've been taught the traditions. We've been taught that aloha is broken down into these values. And so, you know, Auntie Pilahi Paaki shared that what aloha truly means, and we all have our own traditions in our homes, in our hula schools, and she has taken aloha apart, and she says, you know, the first A stands for akahai. Akahai means, you know, gentleness. The L in aloha is for lokahi. That's unity. Everybody be together. And I'm sure this is something that Lily has shared earlier, because we practice and we share this tradition all the time. The O for Auntie Pilahi was olu olu. That's comforting. But in our school, the O would be for oia i'o. And oia i'o means truthfulness, integrity. H is for ha'aha'a, for humility, humbleness. And the last A in aloha would be for ahonui, patience. Sit back, relax, ho'omalimali, check things out. And this is compassion. You put all that together, that's the value that we have. This is what we want our guests to experience. We don't want them just to experience, hello. Well, aloha means hello. And aloha means goodbye.
And I love you.
Aloha means I love you. We do know that, but we want them to know everything what aloha means and live it, you know?
And love it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool. When you think back on some of the stories in the lore that you've read about and learned about, what first comes to your mind? What are some of the coolest stories that are most, oh my gosh?
Oh, one of the most fascinating stories come from my family as a fishing family. And every time I tell this story, I share that our people were bright, brilliant geniuses. So my grandfather and my grandmother used to live in the north end of the old Kona Airport, and it's called Pawai. Eventually, because my grandfather was a fisherman off of that bay, Pawai Bay, it got turned over or changed into the last name of my grandfather, surname of my grandfather, which is Kuneva. So it ended up being Kuneva Bay. My grandfather would go out and feed the koa, or the reefs. And these reefs would have small little big-eyed, google-eyed mackerel, or scads. And he would go out with pumpkin, sweet potato, taro, all mashed up together. He would hit on his canoe, pop, 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 pop. And then he would feed the reef. He would do it every other day, in the morning and in the early evening.
And the fish knew he was coming?
The fish knew he was coming because they heard the tap and they were being conditioned to this. When my grandmother wanted to eat fish or opelo, she'd say, "Daddy, let's have opelo tonight." My grandfather would paddle his two-man canoe with no bait, with no feed, tap onto the canoe. The fish thinks that they're going to get fed. They come up to the surface, and he just scoops whatever he needs, throw it in the canoe, paddle back, and they had fresh fish.
Brilliant.
And I share this because that's pre-Pavlov, you know?
Yeah.
That's conditioned response, and that's why I say our people are such geniuses that they were doing it before all of this documentation and publication. And that was their refrigerator. As long as they fed it, it would come in. The other amazing thing here on this island is our fresh water comes to us from aquifers underneath us. And in Kona, in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, you just needed to go out about 10, 15 minutes and chances of you catching a 1,000-pound Pacific blue marlin was, yee-haw, it was really good. You know, because you didn't have that much big fishermen. But we believe that that comes in from the freshwater springs that is shooting off of the aina. And what happens is the larger fish thinks that they're still in the deep blue, so they come in closer. Yeah? So the more colder the water is, the more they believe that
they're still deep.
Yeah, they're still running deep. So in Kona, to catch a grander a month was, in back in those days, it was possible. Lucky if you can catch one a year, today.
Yeah. The other thing about the Hawaiians back in prehistoric days is their love of play and fun, surfing. And then I remember years ago, somebody told me there was a slide down the mountainside right close to us that went 1,000 feet or something, and they would go down on these sleds. Tell us about that, when that was and what.
The name of that slide or sled, Holua, is called Kaneaka. And Kaneaka is actually, you can see, maybe right now you can't because they didn't have time to clear it off, but you could have seen it right across of the parking lot of the golf clubhouse.
So there's still physical evidence of that slide.
And we usually get students to go up there and clean it out. So you can just park by the parking lot of the clubhouse and you can just look and goes, oh my gosh. It was about 10 yards wide and it was several miles long.
Wow.
One of the games that they did, a makahiki game, was, and of course these games was performed by the ali'is.
And makahiki is holiday time.
A makahiki for us is the season that we're in now. It's 4 months out of the year where we lay down the weapons and we harvest and we feast and holiday time. So we would have these games to keep our warriors in fit physically, mentally, agile, agility-wise. So this game here was they would have a li'i on the surfboard waiting out here for the choice wave, and then another li'i.
These are royalty?
Royalty on top of the sled. And as soon as the li'i on the surfboard catches the wave, that guy gets signaled to go. And the object of this game was to be the first to land on shore at He'i'ia Bay. And I joke around all the time and I said, yeah, the wagers were really high for these sports. They would wager off their wives, their land, no. But it was a really, really, really prominent, really, really special competitive sport because it's the waves are so huge and they didn't have life vests. So, you know, chances of you losing your life is great, as well as being on the holua because it's lava and the speed could get up to 75, 80 miles an hour. Yeah.
What were the little sleds that they...
They would use ohia, and ohia is a native tree here on this island. Actually, it was designed, the dimensions of this, and I could be wrong, but it was 14 foot long. It was 3 to 4 inches in width.
Wow.
And it was about 4 to 5 inches of height from the ground. So you didn't have helmets, shoulder pads, knee pads, elbow pads. It was just...
These were rocket bobsledders.
Exactly. Yeah. And they would lock these sleds or holua in between their chest cage. And a lot of the times we do believe that the women were one of the best sled riders because they could lock it within. Yeah, some of them would stand up on it like they're surfing, but that's insane. But I've seen it done. Today, we have a beautiful gentleman. We call him Pohaku Stone, and he's, for today's generation, he's the one that brings back that art of.
So people still do it today.
He's building it. He's taking it to the school districts. He's taking it into the school system, and he's teaching and telling the story about it. And he takes these replicas and he first have the kids slide down off of the hill, a grassy hill, with cardboards. And then he brings a different type of material to have them slide down so they get the gist of it. Then he goes, okay, anybody want to try the whole lua? And then, of course, he puts helmets on them. And the kids get a kick of it because they're thinking, wow, our people invented this? This is awesome. So now it strikes interest.
And pride,
educational, yeah.
You've been a history teacher in high school here?
Yeah, I've been teaching for many years within the Kona district and on the island of Oahu, as well as in the Waimea district. And I've been sharing the stories that have been shared with me by my grandparents and my elders and the elders within the community.
One more fun story. One of your favorites.
One of my favorite fun stories.
That really gets the attention of the kids.
Oh, gosh. There's so many. I have to think about which one. Okay, so we take you to, we call it Kuamo'o Bay, and that's a quarter of a mile south from here. The kids now call it end of the world, where they can jump off the cliffs and do all their fancy somersaults. So some of the stories that I shared, because of the Makahiki season and because of the Makahiki games, some of the games that was performed there, we call it pahulele. Pahulele means a big bomb, like to make the biggest splash. So a lot of the times the kids like to go there to see, and it's a 40 to 50 foot jump off the cliff to see who can make the biggest splash. And that would be Lele Pahu, excuse me. And then the other one would be Lele Kaua. Lele Kaua is the least amount of splash that our kids can do. Our kids get excited because they never knew that the things that they do normally while jumping off the cliff is actually tied into our Makahiki games and our competitions. And so
you had your own Olympics, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we bring that to light and we tell them, okay, this is Lele Kaua, this is Lele Pahu, this is the objective, this is what you need to do, believe it or not, they'll get about 10, 15 of them around, especially the teenagers, and they'll have a showdown. And today, especially today, with the iPads and all of these video cameras, and it's fascinating how they never knew that they could tie that to their culture. And that's one of my fun stories, only because we always teach the kids, whenever you're on the shoreline, you always be careful. You watch how many waves per set comes in. You watch to see how much white water that is off the shore, how far off the shore. If you see all of these signs, what do? You don't go in. You just sit and observe. Because if not, we won't find you again. Especially on this side of town of Kailua, we have lots of caves. Yeah, we have lots of underwater caves and stuff like that. So when I share this kind of stuff, reality, they're like, and they pay attention. So these are some of the stories I like to share.
Over the time of your life, from the time you were a kid to now, teaching Hawaiian history and culture, have you noticed a growth and a proliferation in cultural pride?
Yes. Growing up, my only tradition was language being spoken in the home by my grandparents and their generation. It skipped my mom's generation. The fishing tradition was a part of our life because we are fishermen family. As I got older and I realized more and more, you hear the stories, you see things start to connect. You make your own choices to educate yourself more, to learn from other historians, other kumuhula or hula dance teachers. And you learn about chants. You learn about protocol. We are always taught that before you go into the ocean, you always ask permission. Who do we ask permission? The higher spirit. I sit down on the side, I see these kids dip their fingertips in the water and make a cross on top of their body. That's a symbolization of asking the higher spirit for permission, for guidance. We're taught that, but we, you know, yeah, how come? Why? When you get older and you start to read and you start to hang out with people of like minds, then you start to tie things together. Today, because in 1973, legislature actually made Hawaiian language and English both the official language of Hawaii, we had some very spunky go-get-em elders on the island of Oahu that decided that we're gonna contribute to this language program because we are first language speakers. They did a journey up to the University of Manoa and said, you need to teach our language in this system. And it is not a foreign language of Hawaii. Lo and behold, we had a lot of support within the university system from a lot of the professors that loved and enjoyed and appreciated the Hawaiian culture. And it started to take place. What also happened was in 1983, these groups of professors and educators, as well as these elders, got together and said, we need to continue this, because there was a steamrolling effect. And what they decided to continue is, we need to open up a Hawaiian language immersion preschool on all of our islands in numerous districts. And so they started a pilot program and it started to take off, and they introduced it to different islands, different districts, and it started to take off. So now what do you do with all of these preschool kids who speak Hawaiian? Hey, guess what happens? The DOE, a lot of our professors, a lot of our parents get involved with politics and they're like, let's get it into the school system. And so today, to bring you up to date, We have Hawaiian language immersion schools offered by the Department of Education. We have Hawaiian culture-focused public charter schools that offer the language. And now it's getting more and more and more cultural-focused, Hawaiian language-focused. In the college or university system, you can get your bachelor's degree, your master's degree in Hawaiian language. About 7 years ago, 8 years ago, we had Hiapo Pereira, who was the first native Hawaiian that got his doctoral degree in linguistics in Hawaiian language. So at the University of Hawaii in Hilo, we have a Hawaiian language college, which is called Kahakuʻula o Ke Elekolani. So what have I seen? When we have language, when we have education, our people, our students, our children can go and read archival documents, newspaper articles. They can read all of these documents that our scholar Hawaiians have written journals about our kings and queens. So there's a huge transformation going on, not as fast as we want it to go, but our children, our families, our communities is growing with education.
Going back in time, David Malo, mm-hmm. 1840s, mm-hmm. he was a real visionary, mm-hmm. and he gave the future generations a wonderful legacy. Talk a little bit about David Malo and what he did.
David Malo, Samikamakau, all of these are the scholar Native Hawaiians that I talk about. So, and I share about. And, you know, I don't profess to know everything, but when I deliver these messages, I deliver it enough so that our children can understand and kind of go, wow, that was pretty cool. And what I mean by that is, not only did we learn from being taught at home, we learn from watching. You know, we learn from keeping our eyes open, our ears open, and our mouth closed. Yeah. And with this type of learning, we believe that that's what our scholar Hawaiians, and I use the word scholar Hawaiians because David Malo was a scholar Hawaiian because he saw what the captains of the ships were doing. They were writing in journals. He followed suit. Why? Because not only that we were told that our ancestors were, it was an oral history and they had to memorize chants and genealogy orally, when they learned how to read and write, they learned with their eyes to follow suit and they saw the doctor drawing the plant. Why are they drawing the plant for? That's this plant. That's for this ailment. They're documenting it. So guess what happens? Our people follow suit and they document the birds. They draw the birds. Lots of credit goes out to all of these scholar Hawaiians because they followed what the foreigners were doing and they said, eventually what happened is all of this information became archival documents and that's what our Hawaiian language students today at the university level are trained to do is translate all of these documents.
I love it.
And I'll give you an example. I travel all over the world with our nonprofit organization. It's called Navai Iwi Ola, under the direction of my dear friend Kumuhula Keala Ching. This journey that we take is a journey of King David Kalakaua. And we take children from Kona, the various age groups, and we take them to these places where we know that King David Kalakaua has handed out free trade and friendship treaties. And we expose our children to these districts, to these countries. And when the people from that country says, "You're Hawaiian? Can you do the hula? Can you chant for us?" Hawaii is a very beautiful, spiritual, loving energy place. Our children are sitting there and going, "This is what people think about our islands and our culture. This is why you guys bring us to these countries." And we're like, to use what you have because you don't understand the value of it. And so my son, he goes, Mom, I know you sing all the time. Mom, I know you chant all the time, and I do that, but I don't sing Hawaiian songs, and I know you keep telling me to do it. And I go, Son, if you practice singing these, but it's too high. You know, I go, you have to train your voice and practice it. And so I tie it into that because he's a beautiful singer and a beautiful chanter. It's just he's got to get more exposed to seeing people appreciating. So we go to Switzerland, we go to Japan, we go to New Zealand, we go all over the place taking the children. We just got invited to go to Philippines, and it's all to share the culture.
I love it. Before we go, would you mind singing for us? You're one of your favorites.
Oh, I didn't bring my ukulele. I can go get it. We can do
That would be awesome.
Yeah, let me go get my ukulele. This song is titled Kaulana Kokona, composed by Kumuke Alaching. Kaulana Kokona, the famous things of Kona. Kaulana Kokona, the first verse talks about this beautiful gentle breeze that we get here. Kaulana Kokona talks about, the second verse talks about Mahualalai, this beautiful mountain. Talks about Kaulana Kokona, Kaopua, the billowy clouds that sits on Hualalai as well as on our horizon. Kaulana Kokona I Kaima Oki Oki speaks about the choppy but also calm seas that we have here in Kona. Kaulana Kokona means holoholo kamoana. Holoholo kamoana is for the deep sea fishing that is famous here in Kona. Kaulana Kokona I Kai Alua speaks about the beautiful bay down in town. Kai'alua means two seas. We have a top current and a bottom current. And these currents bring in different types of fish within the bay. Kaulana Kokona, Ulana Kealoha, talks about the weaving of the pandanus leaf that was famous here to make hats, mats, and beds. Kaulana Kokona, Huaka'ika Opelu. When our families go traveling to different districts, to Hilo, to Kau, to Honolulu, to Maui, they take a basket full of dried mackerel as their gift. And the last verse, Kaulana Kokona Kaheke Ihono. Maui has this saying, Maui no Kaoe, means Maui the best. But Kaheke means that we're better than that. So titled called Kaulana Kokona. Kana Kokona.
So I understand that you guys are right in the midst of finishing up a Hawaiian interpretive center right here at the hotel.
Yes, here at the Sheraton Kona, we were blessed to actually be gifted a facility or a suite here to host all of our cultural activities here. And the idea here is to educate and share and talk story and give as much information to all of our hotel guests as well as our community members about what we're trying to do. Hospitality now, today, are trying to do the right thing with the Hawaiian culture, and we're taking it and we're holding them accountable for it. We do know the struggles in the hotel industry that personally, our culture should not be sold. How do we benefit our department? How do we provide for our group, but for our department? But we do know that if we build it, they will come. And guess what happens? When they start to learn the culture, they start to learn what you have to offer, they'll share and more people will come. That's how we build it.
So in addition to the physical space for meetings and lectures and whatnot, you will have, and you have interpretive displays and artifacts and interpretive artifacts.
So the storyline here would be, it'll tell the story of the things that we actually do on property. So if we don't have an activity going on at that time, they can come in and they can take a walk and goes, hey, what's this about? He goes, well, this is our lei making display. And we have different types of ways to make leis. We use different types of material, and then they can see these things. This is our lava'a or our va'a display. Lava'a is fishing. Va'a is canoe. We do have double hawk canoes that are here. We have activities that you can go on a modern but traditional light sailing canoe, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's giving them a little brief introduction on what the activities are. And then, hey, if you want to do it, this is where you go and do it. The other facility that I was blessed with is an old cottage. It used to be an engineer. One of our directors once stayed there. And prior to that, it used to be a cottage where the cowboys would come down from the mountains and they would utilize when they had to prepare the cattle to get ready to be shipped off to the market. And I got gifted this, our program got gifted this cottage. So I'm very, very appreciative and excited because now I can do lava'a or fishing activities with fishing poles, tag and release. Now I can do dry land taro planting or gourd planting, and we can pound poi. And so these are added features that we're going to be blessed featuring and doing.
Okay, one more if you have time. The lei in Hawaii has been and remains a very special symbolic aspect of Hawaiian life. Talk to us about the spiritual and religious and cultural significance of the lei.
My tradition and the stories that have been shared with us growing up is the relationship is of the family. And it's almost, if you think about it, if you put the child on your shoulder and its legs dangle around your neck or on top of your chest, that's a representation of a lei. When that child sits on your shoulder and that child sits straight up and straight and high, it also gives us a connection to the higher spirit. And these are the things that we were taught at our homes, you know, in our families, that, you know, the child that sits upon your shoulder is a representation of that lei and that connection that we have with that higher spirit. My name is Rolinda Velubin, and I'm the cultural resource person here at the Sheraton Kona. And you can get a hold of me or email me, rolinda.bean@sheraton.com.
Excellent. Rolinda, thank you for sharing. Mahalo.
Mahalo nui no'u ka hau oli.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Big Island of Hawaii.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.